Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Raiders Talk Podcast. And as our regulars know, we normally come out with new episodes on Tuesday and Friday, but this one is coming to you on a Wednesday. So Josh, you and I talked about it, and we wanted to wait a day to talk about sports-related matters to give the appropriate voices a clear floor. Nothing sports-related coming from us or really coming from NBC Sports Bay Area on Tuesday to allow the people talking about police brutality and systemic racism a chance to have their voices amplified as much as possible. So that's why we're coming to you on a Wednesday as opposed to a Tuesday. And this podcast is going to have a lot of sports in it. It's something that we ridiculously called the Choose Your Own Adventure Podcast, where basically fans pick the topics, not necessarily a straight up mailbag, but just themes that we can get into, and we're going to get into several of them as we move forward. But Josh, once again, you and I talked about this before recording this podcast. We thought it was important and required of us to talk about the Raiders' reaction to everything that has been going on recently, stemming from George Floyd's death in police custody, which has evoked a lot of reaction, obviously, in terms of social unrest, but also from the sports community and from the Raiders in specific. So I am kind of going through a long monologue here, but we did want to read Mark Davis's statement in its entirety. And so let's just do that now. The statement came out a couple days ago from Raiders owner Mark Davis, and it is titled "The Murder of George Floyd." And the statement reads as follows: "To watch a man be murdered by a uniformed police officer kneeling on the man's throat for 9 minutes, while three uniformed police officers either assisted or stood by watching, is disturbing in too many ways. To be honest, I'm surprised that the resulting violence hasn't been much worse. Emotions are high, the temperature is hot, and there's static in the air. But burning your brother's house down is ultimately not the answer. Not only do we have to tell people there is something wrong, we have to come up with solutions. That's the challenge in front of us, not only as Americans, but also as human beings." And Josh, it seems like every sports team, every sports owner is releasing one of these statements. What did you think of this one in particular?
Yeah, I thought as far as statements from sports teams or brands, companies go, this one was really well done. It had a lot of pointed, important language. It didn't really tiptoe around the issues as a lot of people have done. And I commend Mark Davis for that. And I think it's important. I mean, as he's obviously a white owner, we are white podcasters and writers. It's just important for us to say that we obviously can never feel what the black community does, but we stand with them and support them, and that black lives do matter.
Yeah, and I think that is really well said, and something that I think that you and I are both trying to do, and that everybody should try and do, is just listen and support in any way possible. And I do think that Mark Davis' statement is not purely reactionary, because if you look at his track record on social issues, it's been pretty strong, not only in this avenue, but also he's almost always taken a hardline stance against domestic violence. And that's been very consistent back when there was a movement to kneel during the national anthem, which was led by former 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. At first, he didn't want players or staffers protesting while in a Raiders uniform, but he softened that stance, understanding what was going on. He listened to what his players were feeling and what they were saying, and all those things I think are pretty important, especially coming from an organization that, Josh, has been on the forefront of social issues within the NFL for some time, in that they hired the first Hispanic head coach, the first African-American head coach, and the first female executive. All those things, I think, kind of fall in line with what they're trying to do. And just to wrap up this conversation, it's also important to include the fact that the Raiders released a statement on behalf of Las Vegas police officer Shay Mika Lonis, who was killed in the line of duty recently in their new market of Las Vegas. Their statement on that: our thoughts and prayers go out to Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Officer Shay Mika Lonis, who was senselessly shot last night while protecting us and our city of Las Vegas. So I think that they've done as good of a job as they can do trying to contact local leaders in their new market, in their new state, and trying to find solutions as opposed to just offering up kind of empty platitudes about what's going on here.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about the importance of white owners, white coaches, white athletes, star white athletes speaking out on the topic as well, because as Richard Sherman said, it sounds differently to a lot of people coming from those voices than it would say a Richard Sherman or other black athletes. So we'd also like to commend Derek Carr. He was one of a number of white quarterbacks, Carson Wentz, Joe Burrow, to issue. He tweeted initially condemning the act, and then he just released a statement to NFL Network's Jim Trotter. And I'm going to read that in full because it's important. So this is Derek Carr's statement. For years, we've all been taught to just stay out of politics, not just as a white athlete, but all athletes in general. I think over the last couple of years, people have begun to break down these barriers by using their platform for what they believe is right. Something I was always taught as an athlete was to keep your head down and be you when there's a major headlining story. I use my platform to preach all over the world, which is an honor and a blessing. But recently, it started to weigh heavy on my heart that it was time to stand up and say what I've been feeling for a long time, disregarding what anyone from any standpoint had to say or think about it. I felt it in my heart, this was the right moment to speak up, to not care so much about politics, but instead to speak truth. I have been angered and heartbroken by any loss of life in the past, but now I feel that I am in a place where I can make a difference with my actions and not just my words. I'm working closely with teammates and higher-ups in the Las Vegas community to take actual actions and strive to make our community better. My goal is simple, and that is to unite people. Nothing bigger, nothing smaller. Unity is how we will see real change occur. As a spiritual, God-fearing man, I believe that our country is dealing with major spiritual heart and system issues. Therefore, I firmly believe the blood Jesus shed on the cross is the answer, not fighting in anger. I feel the same way today as I always have. I want everyone to feel loved and welcome. I want every life to be so precious to everyone. I want people to love their neighbors just as they love themselves. I want a genuine respect and unity for every life that lives in these United States and calls it home. I want the fighting to stop. I want people to help people in need. I want to see people stop striving for power in politics and actually do what they say they were going to do. I want to see prayer back in schools. I want to see team sports be a place where all different walks of life come together for a common goal in our communities. I want to see children raised up loving everyone and not counting them out before they actually know them. That's what I want to see. And I just think that's a very well thought out statement and an important one coming from obviously a major quarterback in it for a major NFL team.
Yeah, and I think that he hit a lot of positive notes. And to what you said in the introduction before that statement is that they're asking kind of higher profile, white quarterbacks, especially the guys that have the limelight, to use that platform in a positive way. And I think that that is a positive way of doing it. I think too often, it can be difficult. You just try to toe the line. You try to be perfectly politically correct, and I think that it was an appropriate time to come out and say something. And we've been saying that there's been a lot of statements here, and I think that we are appropriately praising a lot of the Raiders' reactions. I think the Raiders have done a good job fostering the ability to say what you feel, We saw right tackle Trent Brown tweet out earlier that he feels comfortable talking about any issue with Mike Mayock and John Gruden and Mark Davis, and fostering that type of environment, I think, is important in NFL locker rooms, in a sport, to kind of set an example for what needs to be happening everywhere. Now, you and I also both agree that those actions, those statements, those reactions are positive and maybe offer some contrast to our reaction to what the NFL had to say. Now, I'm not going to read this statement in its entirety, only the last three sentences where the league says, "There remains an urgent need for action. We recognize the power of our platform and communities. And as part of the fabric of American society, we embrace that responsibility and are committed to continuing the important work to address these systemic issues together with our players, clubs, and partners." And I hope that that is the course that they take, but I feel like recent history and examples of what has happened to Colin Kaepernick, their passive reaction last time, this statement rings very hollow to me. It doesn't hold the same weight that some others have. We heard from Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, right? We heard from Chargers coach Anthony Lynn with powerful things to say. We saw Jed York give $1 million to causes designed to fight systemic racism. This statement to me doesn't hold much weight at all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think when you have a number of players reacting to your statement on social media, calling it garbage, basically, I think that says all you really need to hear. They had a chance when Colin Kaepernick started his protest to really put their foot forward and their platform and try and make and help make change, and they chose not to, and that's just the facts. And I feel like it's until they show that it's going to be different this time, it feels like it's going to be much of the same.
Yeah, and before we get to all the football topics and things like that, we just wanted to take a moment on the Raiders Talk podcast to just kind of address the Raiders' reactions to it. We thought that it was fitting. We thought that it was important. And really, there's no way to transition out of that than just to go ahead and do it. So, Josh, let's just go ahead and do it and address the first topic that fans had kind of mentioned, which was that we're seeing moving vans leave Alameda for Henderson, right? And it's not just that they're packing up and getting their facility ready. We actually found out Tuesday afternoon, at first through sources, then eventually through the Raiders announcing it, that because of an NFL edict that all teams are staying home for training camp to avoid travel, there's no more joint practices. That means, which is kind of a bummer for us personally, is there will be no training camp in Napa. 24 consecutive summers up there. That is a break with tradition. It doesn't mean that's the end of a Napa training camp, but going to Henderson, not having that final farewell in the Bay Area, what's your reaction to that? It makes sense given the pandemic, but it's also kind of a bummer too.
Yeah, first I want to close with final thoughts on what we opened with, and just say to Trent Brown's point about being able to talk to John Gruden and Mike Mayock and Mark Davis about anything, I think that speaks to a huge point that anyone who is white that has a platform, whether it be athletes, owners, GMs, entertainers, writers, podcasters, it's just our responsibility to just listen and learn and acknowledge there's an issue and then do what we can to help. So that was my last thought on that. I just wanted to say that before we talk about the Raiders moving to Henderson. When they unveiled the Las Vegas logo, right, that was pretty much it. Yeah. And it does stink that the pandemic has nipped Napa this year. We don't know if they're going to come back. They said they weren't sure, but it does feel like now with the Henderson facility being almost done, they have a nice indoor big facility to protect them from the heat. It does feel like this is really the end of the East Bay era.
Yeah, and Napa was such a cool experience just because the hotel was directly next to the football field, next to the field house. The players and coaches loved it. I mean, you're in wine country the whole time, so fans really loved it. It was a cool environment because you would walk through the Napa Valley Marriott and then this big kind of hotel bar and restaurant, and it would just get flooded with season ticket holders all having, you know, 10 a.m. ales, and Mark Davis would cruise through there, and some Raiders staffers, and they always had a big alumni weekend, you know, with the fans. They'd bring people up, they'd, you know, give them room and board and dinner, and that first alumni weekend when you get a chance to see Lester Hayes cruise through, or Freddie Blitnikoff, and all these kind of old-time Raiders, it was always a cool you know, confluence of Raiders present and Raiders past. So that is a transition. We don't know what's going to happen next year. I talked to Mark Davis last summer, and he's open to the idea of staying in Napa. I think he likes the idea of going away for camp. He'd mentioned Tahoe. Although there's some altitude issues there, he mentioned Reno to kind of give something back to the northern half of their new state. So there's a lot of things up in the air, but that's kind of, you know, one more thing we all knew they were transitioning, but it's really kind of moving now. Their last piece of kind of football business that could have happened in the Bay Area is now going to Henderson and Las Vegas as they get prepped for the 2020 season. One key member of their club kind of showed up in the headlines this week, started on an SEC message board and prompted a statement from the Raiders, and first round draft pick number 12 overall, Henry Ruggs III, has an injury from helping a friend move. And this is a weird offseason story nonetheless. It sounds like, according to his father, Henry Ruggs Jr., who talked to AL.com, a newspaper / website in Alabama, that he was trying to move a trailer or something, move furniture or something, and the trailer kind of pinned him against a car or a wall. And he said that he's pretty much okay, that there's an open wound on his leg, something that he can't get treated because of the COVID pandemic. He can't get into a hospital, so he's just on crutches. It doesn't sound like it's serious from what we've heard. It's not going to be, but there was an initial panic. You hear about your first round draft pick, the guy that we've talked about going to change your offense. Now he's hurt. Ultimately, will this be a blip on the radar thing, you know, in the long term?
Yeah, no, it's a blip on the radar. There was a couple hours there where I remember you texted me the story and you were like, what's this? You know, it's from a message board. And I told you, I was like, those SEC message board, man, those guys are dialed in.
They are.
Sure enough, 3 hours later, it was true. But I mean, like, it sounds like it's minor. He's okay. I think Fantasy Sports Talk on Twitter today said if he's on crutches, it's not going to be an issue for training camp. I think it sounds like he got really lucky. So I think the Raiders would prefer if Henry just maybe hires people to do the moving from now on.
Yeah. I think that's going to be key just because, I think he's going to be an important part of this offense. Maybe if he were to miss some OTAs or something, some normal off-season program activity, maybe, I don't think it would be the end of the world then either, but it might have had a greater impact. But he's not really missing any physical activity at this point. The guy's going to be in shape and ready to go, I think, ultimately, when it matters most. So I don't think that it's, you know, anything major. It's just always kind of interesting to see these things, you know, kind of come up. So
don't move your stuff. You're an NFL wide receiver. Just have someone to move for you. It's fine.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he really hasn't gotten that first big paycheck yet. But nonetheless, take the advance from the agent, you know, get some money and hire some people. And I think that your friends will understand if you're not going to help them move. Right. He's got a big job opportunity here coming up. So before we get to the other topics that you guys wanted to get to, when it comes to keeping an eye on your business, Bay Alarm brings the best. Like a professionally monitored video verification system proven to catch crooks and prevent false alarms, it's one way we can keep our eyes on what you prize. Because if your security's not the best, you're not secure. Go to bayalarm.com/NBC Sports for a special offer to all new business customers. Now more than ever, Bay Alarm. ACOH28CCL880H138. That's a word from our new sponsor, Bay Alarm. Thank you guys so much for sponsoring the Raiders Talk podcast, which has a lot of questions that fans still wanted to hear about. And number one was the biggest question mark heading into this offseason when it comes to chemistry or getting this team going or what you see in the future, not related to the COVID-19 pandemic, which is preventing this this offseason program. Josh, what would you say would be the biggest question mark for you as we move forward to see if the Raiders can truly improve or if they're going to have another season in the middle of the pack?
Yeah, for me, I think it's just going to be how the offense as a whole gels. We know they got a lot of weapons now, full arsenal. But we also know Derek Carr, you know, he likes the guys he likes, who has chemistry with, and Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller. But I'm interested to see just how Ruggs, how Bryan Edwards, how Limbone, how that all fits together and how quickly that offense can get up to speed and be the unit we think it can be. Because I think, as we've talked about, it's going to be important for them to get a couple wins right out of the gate if they want to advance to the playoffs.
And there's so many moving parts, right? Like, there's so many new variables in this offense and so many weapons they have to get integrated, whether it's with, you know, specific packages, kind of like Lynn Bowden, or maybe what Henry Ruggs is going to do and how everything is going to, you're right, kind of fit together. I think that that's a very fair question mark, because you look at it and you think, well, they have a lot of speed now. They have a lot of talent. They have a lot of depth. Yeah. Gabe Jackson's salary is fully guaranteed now. So they've got their starting five, most expensive starting five in football. But how it all gels is absolutely going to be key. Now, the thing that I was thinking about when I read this question or this topic is on the defensive side of the ball, right? How many times have we talked about the fact that they invested heavily in free agents and that we think that they should be better, right? No. On paper, they look better. But will this team be able to go out and function in a way where they're ball hawks, where they can increase their level of pressure? Can they reach, can they do it, right? Because it's been a long time, even 2016 doesn't even really count, since this defense was intimidating or formidable or didn't have a glaring weakness. And I think that it's important for every level of this defense to be better. But when I look at the linebacker core, and I don't want to put it all on just one guy, but when you look at middle linebacker Nick Kukowski, I think he's the guy that's going to be calling signals. He's the guy that is going to have to be that extension of Paul Gunther. Can he get up to speed enough, quickly enough, between him and Corey Littleton and their safeties to be able to make the right checks, the right calls? You don't want those types of mistakes early in the season. Can you get started fast? And I think that that's going to be important, that everybody's on the same page. How often, especially early in the year, do we see guys pointing fingers like they were in the wrong coverage or they weren't on the same page and those types of things? To your earlier point, right? Got to get a couple wins early to get the momentum going. You can't have mistakes like that, especially against the Saints, right? Against teams like that. You'll get scalded. So they need to get on the same page quickly. I think that's a lot on the linebackers to make sure that they are communicating well, that they understand a new scheme well. That's not going to be easy when it comes down to it, but they do need to kind of hit the ground running, because this is a team where every win's going to be valuable.
Yeah, I mean, and that unit as a whole, I mean, there are a lot of new starters on that side, right? I mean, other than what? Trayvon, and we assume Cleland and Max and Mo, I mean, the rest are brand new.
Right.
Abram only played one game, so he's basically brand new. I mean, he knows the system, but so that's a lot of new blood who has to learn a new scheme and learn how to communicate together really fast.
Yeah, and we don't know how this how the integration of players back into facilities is going to go. The NFL did send some new guidelines that they're able to open up some kind of public facing ticket offices, merchandising stores, the team facilities, which the Raiders are transitioning to a new one. Those things are starting to open up in little ways. Will they get a mini camp off? Maybe, maybe not. Will this all come down to training camp? In which case, could training camp be expanded? There's a bunch of kind of unknowns right now. But nonetheless, what I think the things that we're really talking about is taking advantage of the opportunity that you have to build chemistry. You know, we've seen even more recently that the Las Vegas Raiders public park crew is kind of expanding. Darren Waller's out throwing with Derek Carr now, and with Renfrow and Jones. And I think that we're starting to see, the closer that we get, we're seeing more of those guys go out there. Demarius Randall is out there right now with Jonathan Abram. We're starting to see more Of those guys, Colton Miller, the offensive linemen, are starting to get together. I think all those things are key. And you're right, might as well just move to Las Vegas, because it seems like that's going to be where they're going to start start kind of practicing now. Next topic here is Derek Carr focused, right? And the kind of question is, and the topic is, if you can take 2016 Derek Carr and apply him to 2020, what does that mean for the first year Las Vegas Raiders? Does it send the ceiling through the roof? Is he one of those true wild card X factors? Play like 2016, sky's the limit. Maybe don't play up to that level. Maybe it's less. How do you view, obviously he's the quarterback, so it's a big deal how he plays, but how do you view his role? And if he can surge, do you think it really kind of sends, again, the Raiders ceiling way up, their win improvement way up?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, he's the quarterback. That's the most important position in sports, right? So his play is very important. And if he's going to be the MVP contender quarterback he was in 2016, mm-hmm. I think that can take this team from 7-9 last year to, I mean, you know, maybe 10-6, right? Maybe 11-5. If everything gels right, if he's really good, the line holds up, you know, if the offensive weapons, if everything's clicking, if the defense improves from 31st to 20, like we talk about, and he's really good, they can be 11-5. And I mean, like I said, we don't know what's happening with the Chiefs. They're still, the talent gap is still wide, but if Derek Carr is going to take his game up one or two notches, right, he can close the gap.
And I think that a quarterback surge can not take some pressure off, but we talk about all these things needing to happen for the Raiders to be really good. Well, I think if the quarterback surges, maybe you don't need quite as big of a swing from the secondary, let's say, right? That having the quarterback go up and the offensive line stay steady, let's say, allows for a bunch of other things to only go up marginally, to where if the quarterback is statistically fine, but maybe not as dynamic as we're talking about, or as dynamic as Derek was in 2016, then every boat's got to be higher, right? That all of a sudden you need that defense to be at 20.5 points per game, you know, like something like that, where you need big improvements everywhere. I go back to that 2016 season, and they really had, they just kind of caught this momentum, and this confidence was like infectious. They went into 10 a.m. games on the East Coast with confidence. You know, they went into a game in Mexico City with weird travel, with confidence, that they believed at the end of games that they could really do that. And that's something that maybe we've seen kind of the opposite, especially in 2017 and 2018, where you sort of felt like, if it doesn't go right, here we go again, right? Yeah, so I think that's another part of it, why you and I have both mentioned the quick start, the finding a way to build that chemistry early is so key, because then you kind of surge, right? And then Derek gets gets, you know, kind of some of that real confidence that, hey, we can do this. We have the team to do it, and it can kind of build and really get some kind of positive things going. That's how I think that, you know, they can really live up to potential and kind of raise that ceiling. So, I mean, it's always all on the quarterback, right?
I mean, I will say, I mean, quarterback is one of the very few positions in sports where if that person raises their game and they are really, really, really good, that sends energy through the entire team and everyone else raises their game. Whereas if the quarterback's, you know, struggling, not playing well, all of a sudden the team kind of slunks back, everyone feels weight on them. Mm-hmm. So if Derek raises his game, I think, like you said, it's going to take weight off everyone and energize the entire team to just go out there and play free.
Yeah, and I think that would be good for them defensively too, not feeling the pressure of, we got to make a stop every time, maybe be more aggressive, try to get those takeaways up, try to get those game-changing plays we've talked so much about, whether it's, you know, I think there were zero sacks from linebackers or defensive backs last year. Wow. there were very few interceptions in general. That those types of things kind of have to change. And ultimately, I think you're right. If the quarterback plays well, you kind of get this surge and this feeling of invincibility because your guy can do it. I mean, I'm sure the Packers and the Patriots know all about that feeling. You walk into every game feeling Chiefs. Like you can win it. Right. Chiefs. yeah, that's probably the best possible example. Now, this last topic, Josh, I think you kind of, when I first brought it up, hey, like, we're going to talk about it. And you were like, we're really going there now. But hey, we give the people what they want. And if they want to know something about free agency and the draft in 2021 before they've played or practiced a single session in 2020, then by goodness, that's what we're going to give them. Yeah. So quick primer. As of right now, according to overthecap.com, they have $34 million in cap space for the 2021 season. They have a standard allotment of draft picks, meaning no extra first rounders anymore. That's all kind of been spent now. $34 million, without getting super into it, there are some questions about normally the salary cap increases pretty steadily. Now with the lost revenues over this COVID thing, maybe the lack of fans could be $5 or $6 billion in lost revenue, about $80 million per team. Salary cap isn't about greedy owners. It's all collectively bargained based upon revenue. Means it could be flat or not quite as high as normal. Take that information in. Also take information, this information in. Yeah, okay, they only have $34 million, but they can do whatever they want, really, because they can get Tyrell, $11.6 million, Gabe, $9.6 million, Joyner, $8.7 million, Mariota, $10.1 million, Card, $19.6 million, right? That's all the cap savings that they can get by releasing some of those players. So nothing but flexibility. Very few people that they really have to re-sign next year. If Malik Collins goes good, there's a couple guys on one-year deals that you might want to bring back. But other than that, they have a lot of freedom. Kudos to Tom Delaney, their salary capologist. He's very good at what he does. So with that all kind of being said, would you expect, and of course, it all depends on what happens next season, who thrives. So we're not making bold predictions here, but would you, you know, like when you look at those guys who can be cut, do you think that the freedom and flexibility allows them to really go out and make bold moves in free agency that they can really kind of try to build on these things and maybe go luxury shopping if they feel like it?
Yeah, no doubt. Like you said, we have no idea how the 2020 season plays out. Like maybe LaMarcus Joyner and Tyrell Williams, you know, return to the elite level and they pick up the options and then they don't have that luxury. But I think that those options and Marcus Mariota's, that Derek Carr, that whole situation, right? One of those quarterbacks probably isn't going to be on the roster,
right?
Which frees up a lot of cap space. So I think that will give the Raiders the option to look at, you know, maybe a guy like Jalen Ramsey, if he's available, or a big name, a big ticket, if they feel like they need it, right? Mm-hmm. Or they could do what they did this year and get one upper tier guy and then spread it out.
Right. And the John Gruden teams are, every NFL roster has turnover. His has a ton.
Yes.
Historically, even back in Tampa, constantly shuffling through guys. There's a lot of guys on one-year deals this year. And again, a lot of that salary cap flexibility. Now, again, ridiculous conversation, so just bear with us, but who they should target in 2021. I mean, like, my first instinct was just to stick with the guy I picked last time, Chris Jones, right? The guys on franchise tags, they almost never get two franchise tags in a row, because then you're talking about an increase based upon what they made last year. It's a crazy surge. Those guys normally hit the market if they can't come out of it. But Malik Collins could have 10 sacks and
right.
And you may not need a guy like that, you know, but there are some intriguing names out there. Patrick Peterson, Melvin Ingram, a guy that I think Colt Miller could tell you all about how frustrating he can be. Justin Simmons, who I think the Raiders might've been interested in, had the Broncos a defensive back, had he been free. But again, for us to try to be able to pick somebody is very difficult, but there's options out there, and the Raiders, again, have the flexibility to kind of keep building and address needs where they see fit. Should, you know, some of these draft picks maybe not pan out well right away, you know, and if they need to kind of do some more roster shuffling.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is I'm just going to go into it assuming that the Raiders stack talent on talent with two good draft classes.
Yeah.
You have a good base, and then – they can enter the 21 free agent class saying, okay, we've got X amount of good to really good players, but maybe we're deficient in stars, right? We don't have that many game changers at position X, Y, or Z. And then they can look at either You know, maybe it's wide receiver with Juju Smith-Schuster or Chris Godwin, or maybe it's defensive tackle with Cameron Hayward or Edge, Matthew Judon, Melvin Ingram. I think Melvin Ingram, Colt Miller would be thrilled if they went and got Melvin Ingram. He would absolutely love that. And then you just take something away from the Chargers, who I think are going to be an issue for a long time. So I think it's just going to depend how everything plays out, how the draft class plays out, and where they want to take a swing at star potential if they feel like they need it.
Mm-hmm. And also just something to think about here. And again, we're looking so far into the distance, but the ultimate goal of an NFL team is to stack draft classes to the point that you have depth, and then you can reward your own.
Correct.
That's not something that the Raiders have done very often, because there's been nobody to reward, right? That John Gruden got rid of a lot of guys from the 2016 and 2017 draft classes, pretty much pre-John Gruden, there are, what, five or six guys, right? And that even from the 2018 draft class, it's almost – I think it will be more and more Gruden-Mayock guys more than anything else. So my point in saying that is, while there is a gap here in guys that you want to give long-term contracts to, normally you think about first-round guys that maybe they would have had to extend Carl Joseph had he been a Pro Bowl type player, or Gary Conley, that you'd be worrying about those extensions coming up, or some other guys in that second and third round, kind of vacant, you know, here. Yep. So right. Ultimately, at some point, you're probably going to need a heavier amount of cap space. Let's say Colt Miller continues trending up, right? Yes. The way that we have seen the first couple of years. Eventually, he could get really expensive. And you don't want to ditch a guy that knows your system, has a great temperament, and fits in well with your ball club. So at some point, you're going to have some extra space, and you're going to have the freedom that you have now to be able to create that space to pay the guys that you want, right? That's what the really good teams have to do at some point. So really, when you look at it, I think the bottom line here, right, over bold predictions, is the Raiders are in great, they're in a great space from a salary cap freedom perspective, the way that they arrange their contracts. I think they will continue to be able to do that, giving roster bonuses up front because they have this new revenue stream from Vegas. All those things are going to be possible. So I think they're in good shape. Now, back to your point, right? Stacking draft classes is the only way that you can make this work. Otherwise, you got to go say, we're totally screwed. We need to go buy Chris Jones and Justin Simmons, right? You have to go buy these really expensive talents. And then, I don't know, I kind of think that you're in trouble. So ultimately, it's about draft, develop, and then re-sign.
Ultimately. Yeah, free agency, as Mike Mayock likes to say, is always a gamble, right? There's a reason these guys are on the market.
Yeah.
So you want that not to be your first resort and your plan A, but mainly just, hey, we have a really good team. We'll take a shot at this guy, and if it doesn't pan out, you know, we're not totally in the weeds. We can just nix it, you know, in a contract out maybe in 2 years, i.e. Tyrell Williams or LaMarcus Joyner, and go about our day.
Yeah. And so now we've looked over basically the last remaining days in the East Bay all the way into next season, and we haven't even gotten to this one yet. But I hope that you guys enjoy this latest Raiders podcast. We have another one coming Friday. Lots of different topics here on Choose Your Own Adventure Day. Josh, I just want to say, very well said at the top, with, you know, kind of what's going on in our society and how it relates to our sports franchises being leaders and you know, role models and positive examples in that regard. I thought everything you said there was really good. So guys, as always, thank you guys so much for listening. Comment, subscribe. You guys know how to do it. And we'll get back to you guys on Friday.
See you later.
The Raiders Insider Podcast on NBC Sports California.com.